It was a terrible trial. It was truly all-consuming. This particular friend is a real athlete. He's a big wave surfer on Huntington Beach. He surfs waves that are nearly the size of this building. And every now and then, you get under a big wave like that, and it'll have all that massive wave just drive you to the bottom and put you in like a spin cycle. And you have to keep your composure. You've got to really be trained for that. You've got to be able to hold your breath. You've got to really be able to relax. You can't fight that kind of current. You've got to just wait for your opportunity. It's really an amazing thing. And he described to me that this trial, this thing he was going through, was so all-consuming that even there, he found himself there, pinned to the bottom on his back by the weight of water. Even there, it was on his mind. Even there. In fact, he found himself thinking, well, I could die, and I'll be free of that. Can you relate to that? So let's pray before we go to the study. And just ask the Lord to help us. And let me also remind you, all that you might be tempted to worry about, all that you're puzzled over and seeking God for wisdom about, all the fight, everything, all of it could end tomorrow. We could be yanked out of here, caught up. It can happen. There isn't anything that has to happen first. Father, I pray that you please help us to give our full attention to your word. I'm not exempt from what I just described and the troubles that we find ourselves in. The world, the state of the world, all the things that are going on, the pressures that are coming on your people, so many here in our church family, dealing with it all this week, it seems to be all-consuming for all of us. Help us now to focus our attention on you, to take all of that that is heavy on our minds and put it on your sort of altar. The way that Hezekiah brought a letter, a threatening letter from the enemies of Israel, he brought it in and laid it open in the temple, said, it's for you. Help us do likewise. Lay it on the altar, lay it wide open, like an unscrolled, wide open letter facing up. And give our attention to the truth of your word and the wisdom of your word and the goodness of our God. I pray in the name of Christ. Help us focus now on you and your truth. Amen. So be it. Proverbs chapter 13 tonight. Perhaps even 13 and 14. Proverbs chapter 13. A wise son heareth his father's instruction, but a scorner heareth not rebuke. So what is rebuke for? Rebuke is for not hearing instruction. If one receives instruction, one can avoid hearing rebuke. A wise son receives instruction, but a scorner can't even receive rebuke. Can't listen. A man shall eat good by the fruit of his mouth, but the soul of the transgressors shall eat violence. So what comes out of our mouths in the form of thoughts expressed by words has the capacity to come back to us in such a way as to affect our life. It's like food. It's like nourishment. It's like it has the capacity to bring good. And whatever it is that comes out of us, whatever it is that comes out of our heart, our mind, through our mouth, good or bad, is going to come back. We're going to eat it in a very real spiritual sense. That's why verse 3 says, he that keepeth his mouth keepeth his life. But he that openeth wide his lips shall have destruction. Profoundly, profoundly wise, isn't it? So if we just guard our mouth, if we would be quicker to listen and slow to speak, as James would urge us to be by the Holy Spirit, we would do well. I don't think we really appreciate how powerful this gift of speech really is, and the ability to affect our fellow man, and the ability to, in a very real sense, affect our own lives. What comes out of us affects us. What we hear coming out of us does not just affect others, it affects us. Most profoundly true. All the more reason why we should, as God said to Joshua, Joshua 1:8, this book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth. In other words, you never cease to speak the word. But thou shalt meditate therein day and night. You should always be meditating on it. We should always be speaking it. Speaking it affects us. Speaking it, hearing it from ourselves affects us. Verse 4 says, the soul of the sluggard desireth and hath nothing. The soul of the diligent shall be made fat. The sluggard craves. But without a plan and without action to execute the plan, the craving is just that. It's just a wish. That's all it is. So the sluggard lives with just that, but doesn't have what they're after. But it's the diligent, and the diligent and the sluggard are always contrasted by Solomon. The diligent, the one who just deliberately sets their course and then is consistent. Diligence requires consistency. Consistently getting up even if you don't feel like it, and consistently going to work. Consistently doing this thing that God has given you to do. Just keep plugging away. Just keep plodding. So the diligent, contrasted with the sluggard. Verse 5 says, a righteous man hateth lying, but a wicked man is loathsome and cometh to shame. So, it's one thing to hate lying when you're being lied to, but it's another to hate lying when you find yourself tempted to lie. A righteous man hates lying, hates doing it, not just hearing it. Verse 6, righteousness keepeth him that is upright in the way, but wickedness overthroweth the sinner. Contrast with that. Righteousness will actually guard you if your way is blameless, but sin overthrows. It'll undermine you. So what is sin? Let's remember that again. Missing the mark. Missing the mark off our target. The target is perfection. The target is God's standard. The more we miss it, the more we undermine our own lives. It's true. Verse 7, there is that maketh himself rich, yet hath nothing, and there is that maketh himself poor, yet hath great riches. That is translated this way in the English Standard Version. One pretends to be rich, yet has nothing. Another pretends to be poor, yet has great wealth. It's been proven out. It's amazing how many very rich men will say practical things like pack your own lunch. Those little things. Just pack your own lunch. It's a stewardship issue, right? There are people who live way beyond their means. They pretend to be rich, and yet they're broke. They're so in debt that they don't actually own anything. It looks like they own. They owe it all to an institution that they're renting it from and straining to do that, right? And contrast that with there are some who live in such humility and they're not pretentious. I've actually only known personally as friends 3 billionaires. Not that many of them in the world. I didn't know they were billionaires. They weren't wearing bling, big giant dollar signs. Those are the guys who are wishing. Those are the guys who are pretending. You know, you got a big giant chain with a huge. They don't have like Richie Rich's swimming pool. I've known these people. I've only known a few, but I've been amazed at the modesty whereby they live. And I should tell you, those who are really rich, the actual rich people, they'll tell you, riches are not. Rich. Everyone thinks, they go, one guy says, you know, my wealth, everybody thinks, was the answer to their problem. My wealth, he said, is my problem. is constant maintenance, constant vigilance. Everybody wants a piece of it. You can't tell who your friends are. You have to wonder about everybody who's even introducing themselves. What do you want? So it's good to not be all showy about your wealth. That's a profound verse, isn't it, really? Verse 8, the ransom of a man's life are his riches. But the poor heareth not rebuke. Contrasting the sluggard with the diligent, contrasting the wise with the fool, and contrasting here the rich man with the poor man. The ransom of a man's life is his wealth. But a poor man hears no threat. It's another way of saying that. A poor guy, he's got nothing to lose, little to lose. Verse 9, the light of the righteous rejoiceth, but the lamp of the wicked shall be put out. The light and the lamp. One rejoices, one will be ultimately extinguished. Verse 10 says, only by pride cometh contention. So, all right, think about that. Every time there is contention, what is there at the root of it? It's pride. Only by pride cometh contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom. With the well-advised. Well, it is in the ESV, by insolence comes nothing but strife. Insolence. I had to actually look that up today, thinking, how long has it been since I looked at a definition of insolent or insolence? And insolence is literally actually just being filled with contempt. But with those who take advice is wisdom. So again, the insolent, full of contempt, is contrasted here with somebody who is truly wise. You got to be humble enough to take advice, to demonstrate wisdom. So again, pride and humility are contrasted. Pride doesn't bring us anything good, you guys. Pride does not bring anything good. Humility does. Pride always leads to humiliation. Humility always leads to honor. Don't take my word for it. Take the word of the Son of God for it. He said so, like in Luke chapter 14. He said, everyone who exalts himself will be humbled. Everybody who humbles himself will be exalted. So the way up is down, the way down is up. Everybody who's like, me, I'm awesome, and promotes themselves, gets to experience the humiliation of going down. All right, so remember how the Lord in Luke 14 illustrated it? He was at a feast. He went to a feast. And remember, I've told you this before, at a big feast in that culture, every seat in the big horseshoe table arrangement had significance. There was the highest ranking end and there was the lowest ranking end. Every spot on the table, the big horseshoe, the big triclinium, every spot had rank. The guy down here on this one end is the lowest rank. The guy up on this end is the highest, most honored guest of the host of the feast. So the Lord Jesus watched everybody come in. In this occasion, he was invited there by his enemies, and he watched them all just go find their place. Can you imagine how awkward that would be if every seat has rank? And somebody goes, all right, everybody, come on in. And you got to take a seat. And you're looking at each other, no, and trying to find your place. Can you imagine that? Maybe you've ever, I don't know, if you've ever had to line up according to height. And you're looking at other people trying to figure out where you fit, where you go. Well, imagine this. You're going to line up according to importance. So what's everybody trying to do? Everybody's trying to get up to the highest seats. Like they do in every schoolyard, and every company, and everything in this world. What'd the Lord say? He watched it happen. And when they're all done, he goes, can I give you guys some advice? Listen, when you get invited to something like this, take the low seat. There's a pretty good chance you'll get honored. The host may go, What are you doing down there? Come up here. And you'll be honored in the sight of everyone. What if you take a high seat? You know, and the host of the feast goes, give this guy your place. And you begin with shame to take the lower seat. How humiliating. That's what the Lord said. Now, who's the guy saying it? The one who left the glory of heaven, the one who has had the furthest to come down of anyone. He made himself human, took on the form of a man, and as a man, took the role of a slave. That's who's saying it. And who is now exalted to the highest place in the whole universe. He's the King of Kings and is the Lord of all lords. He's exalted to the highest place. He's exalted to the same degree that he condescended, that he humbled himself. That's what we're called to. So pride only brings trouble. It only sets us up to be humiliated. One more thing. Do you know you cannot humiliate a humble person? It's impossible. When you're already humble, you go, whatever. Only people that get humiliated are prideful people. It is proof of my own vanity when I look in the mirror and go, oh, dude. Proof of vanity. Because if I was really humble and I'd see ugly, I'd see age, and I'd go, ha, good. You deserve it. But when you look and you see flaws, it's a proof of like, oh, I wish I looked cooler. I wish my nose wasn't so fat, my ears so big. I wish they didn't flap in the breeze like they do now. Riding in the Jeep, I can look in the rearview mirror and see them flapping. Troubles me. Why? Because I'm vain. When you're really high, the only people that can be humiliated are prideful people. You cannot humiliate someone who is humble. You can't humble somebody who's humble. You can only humble a proud person. All right, think about that. So what does it mean every time we experience humiliation? That we're prideful. Only always. Verse 11, wealth gotten by vanity shall be diminished. In other words, wealth gotten hastily, ESV, is not going to be maintained. Oh, the get-rich-quick schemes. Don't allow the person who attains them the ability to develop the skill to maintain them. Only every single professional athlete proves this. Only every pro athlete, the vast majority of them, more than 80% of them, are bankrupt just 2 years after their pro career ends. Do you know that? Why? It's get rich quick. It's the same with all of the, you know, I don't care if you're a rock star, you're a rap star, you're a country star. Boom, you hit it rich, you hit it big with some hits, you get rich. But you don't have the skill to manage that. You didn't develop any skill to manage. You developed one skill, and that was, you know, making your art. Very few of them die rich. Do you know that? Very few of them take the riches that they've, it's almost like winning. It's like, think about it, it's like fighters. I'm sorry, I don't want to pick on the fighters. But when your profession involves you experiencing blunt trauma to your head, generally speaking, you're not doing things that are going to maintain your brain function. And they're preyed upon. Toughest guys in the world are exploited by smart, dirty, rotten, rascal business guys who talk them in to investments. Oh, I've seen things. I have. You guys know what I'm talking about. Wealth gained hastily will dwindle. But whosoever, I'm sorry, I'm reading ESV there, but he that gathereth by labor shall increase. And it's actually translated this way in the ESV, whoever gathereth little by little will increase. Gathering it little by little, in that process, you're maintaining and you're growing in your ability to manage that. So I'm just saying, it's a rare thing. It's an incredibly rare thing for anybody who got rich quick to stay rich. incredibly rare. And there's reasons for that. And usually their wealth is being picked away by people who have those skills. Verse 12 says, hope deferred maketh the heart sick, but when the desire cometh, it's a tree of life. So surely, you've all experienced a hope being deferred. You know what it's like to lose hope, or you had this hope, you had something you were banking on, and such an investment emotionally, and then somebody flushed it. You know what it's like to have a heart sick, a sick heart. Contrast that. A desire fulfilled is like a tree of life, a tree of life. A desire fulfilled, a dream come true. Verse 13 says, whoso despiseth the word shall be destroyed, but he that feareth the commandment shall be rewarded. So again, a contrast. Those who despise the word versus those who actually reverence the command. There are consequences to despising the word. There's a reward for having reverence for the command. Verse 14, the law of the wise is a fountain of life to depart from the snares of death. You do know there are snares, right? You all know there are traps. There are traps laid, we can all fall into them. There are pits covered over, and we can drop in, and they can cost us. It is the law of the wise that steers us around all of that, keeps us from falling into those traps, snares of death. Verse 15, good understanding giveth favor, but the way of transgressors is hard. Or as we say here in Maine, the way of the transgressors had. It's had. Look at had. Do you ever, honestly, you look at somebody and they're living their life continually transgressing the law of God, and it's not paying off. You know, they get a little pleasure every now and then, but that's all. And it's costing them everything. Come on, you ever seen yourself looking at somebody and go, oh my goodness, how much harder does this guy have to get, right? All right, you guys all know the expression, rock bottom. We all know it doesn't exist, don't we? Every time the people that love you think, oh good, they just got to hit rock bottom. Well, it looks like rock bottom. Oh no. Oh no, there are greater depths. There's guys with jackhammers and blasting caps. And they're gonna descend yet lower. What is rock bottom? It's not the place where you cannot go any lower. The bottom is just the place where you quit descending. I've had enough of this. I'm gonna stop descending. This stinks. The way of the transgressor is hard. Man, I have seen it. I have seen people losing everything. I've seen them in such wreckage. And I'll say to them, wait a minute, can't you see that your choices have cost you everything? Aren't you ready to repent? Oh, no, 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 I'm okay. No, I'm good. I'm all right. I'm good. I'm good. Remember one time I got to the church early back when I was in my 20s. I'm a young preacher. And it seemed like all the people I was doing ministry to were all young, partying age. And, you know, it was winter time. I got there early in the morning, as is my custom, right, on the Lord's Day. And there's a guy standing outside with no jacket, freezing. I knew him. And this was, I'm talking about in Brewer, Maine. This guy got in trouble with all the people he was partying with, bad people, and had to flee. He's all scun up and freezing. The only thing that kept him alive all night was moving. No jacket. He had to run from these bad guys. He goes all the way from Ellsworth that way. From Ellsworth. What a miserable night. Running in the woods every time a car comes. Back out on the road. What a miserable night. I'm saying to him as he comes in, he's warming up, I go, are you ready to repent? Man, the way of the transgressor is hard. Goes, no, I just need to warm up. Just need to warm up. Just all I need, just to warm up. Oh, you need more than that, man. Wouldn't listen. The way of the transgressor is hard. It's a hard way. We're trying to make it easy for ourselves with transgression. We're not. We're just making it harder. Verse 16 says, every prudent man dealeth with knowledge, but a fool layeth open his folly. It's a fine verse. Can I read it from the English Standard Version? Every prudent man acts with knowledge. A prudent person acts with knowledge, but a fool flaunts his folly. Flaunts it! Just crazy. The way people will flaunt it, will just boast about it. The wreckage. Flaunting their folly, just putting it on display. Verse 17, a wicked messenger falleth into mischief, but a faithful ambassador is health, or actually brings healing, ESV. A faithful ambassador brings healing. A wicked messenger falls into trouble. A wicked messenger. Verse 18, poverty and shame shall be to him that refuseth instruction, but he that regardeth reproof shall be honored. I don't like, do you guys, any of you like reproof? I don't like it. I don't like it when somebody's telling me where I blew it, or what I did this wrong. But if we heed it, if we actually regard it, we can alter our course. It's not enjoyable, but if you actually regard it, you will be honored. It's a humiliating thing, isn't it, for somebody to tell you what you're doing wrong, or what's wrong with you. It's humiliating, but if you heed it, humiliating as it may be, you'll be honored. Verse 19, the desire accomplished is sweet to the soul. But it's an abomination to fools to depart from evil. It's an abomination to fools to quit, to depart. You suggest to them, you need to quit this. And that's a repulsive thought. You guys know what abomination is, all right? I've told you. Anything that it brings delight, it contrasted with that which is brings disgust. Oh. An abomination is whatever grosses you out. It's an abomination to fools to depart from evil. It's just the suggestion that they quit the evil is utterly repulsive. They love it. They love the evil. They love their own wickedness. And you suggest you got to quit, and they get all upset. It's like the precious, whatever the evil is. Don't touch that. Don't you? It's an abomination, especially when somebody goes, yeah, there's a place you can go, and they won't even let you smoke cigarettes. And you hear people. I know people that have said, "Send me to jail." Don't send me there. Send me to jail. I know a bunch of guys over the years that have gone, no, I'll choose jail over the suggestion of departing from evil. Verse 20, he that walketh with the wise man shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. There you go. You walk with the wise, you'll be wise. They'll rub off on you. You got to pick your company, man. You got to pick your friends. You got to choose them well, because if you walk with the wise, but if you walk with the otherwise, it'll cost you. I think it was a Spurgeon quote, the wise versus the otherwise. But if you will take your journey and choose your companions, those who demonstrate wisdom, you'll benefit. It'll pay off for you. But a companion of fools will be destroyed. I've talked about that enough times. And I don't know how it is with you ladies, but I know for sure with boys and later on with men. Men who are being stupid, put them together, stupider. They bring each other's IQs plummeting just in the company, just the influence. They get dumber by the second. So I'm sure it's the same with you ladies. Just can't speak to that up close. But I've seen it with men. I've seen it. I've heard it. The companion of fools shall be destroyed. Verse 21, evil pursueth sinners. It's after you. Evil, literally trouble, okay? Verse 21 in the ESV is disaster pursues sinners. It's after you, man. But to the righteous, good shall be repaid. It's going to come to you. In a world like this one, guys, it's cause and effect. In a world like this one, where the law of God is what you sow is what you will reap. It all pays. Verse 22 says, a good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children. And the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. Think about that one for a second. It's an expression of the goodness of one's heart that you're thinking ahead. You're thinking ahead and you want to positively affect your own children and your grandchildren. You leave something behind for them. I mean, it's not an inheritance to leave massive debt behind that, you know, somehow or another they're saddled with. A good man leaves an inheritance with thinking about the future of our children. It is an expression of our current state of mind in America. Nobody is thinking about the massive debt that we're saddling children's children and children's children with. It's a great sin. Nobody speaks much about it. It's such a great sin. Such national wickedness. Verse 23 says, much food is in the tillage of the poor. But there is that destroyeth for want of judgment. Let me read that from the ESV. The fallow ground of the poor would yield much fruit, but it's swept away through injustice. Swept away for lack of judgment. For want of judgment. Profoundly true. So it's justice, as God defines justice, not as Karl Marx does, but it's justice. See to it. And that's the job of government. That's the singular focus of government, according to Romans 13. We were just there last Sunday night. Make sure that there's justice. Make sure that there is right and there is wrong and that people aren't exploiting one another. And who are usually exploited? The poor. Verse 24 says, he that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. Old English. Chastens him early. He's diligent to chasten him. So if you ever entertain the thought, I can't correct them, I love them, I don't want to hurt their feelings, you better hurt their feelings, or you don't love them. It's not an expression of love to not sting. It's not an expression of love. I remember when my daughter was in middle school, and I've always said it's harder. It was so hard for me to discipline my daughter. It'd break my heart. My daughter. Disciplining sons, not that bad. And the old saying, this is going to hurt me more than you, only applied to my daughter. Did not apply to Micah or Ben. Never has. No, it's going to hurt you more than me. I'm sure of this. I remember even in middle school, and I'm having to be there in a meeting with a teacher, not getting stuff done, not doing the things that need to be done, and now she can't play basketball. Pitiful, pathetic. I cried in the meeting. I did. I cried. I was like, I'm shedding tears because now I got to tell you, you can't play basketball. I hate that game. I don't care about basketball. But it was a big deal to her, a big social thing. Had to do it anyway. Had to do it even if it didn't. Even if I did cry while I was doing it. Had to be done because I loved her. So whatever the rod of correction is, obviously it's not always going to be a switch. Goodness sake, I hope you guys all understand the switch is for the stage of life where a child doesn't get anything else. Nothing else makes sense. You can try time out. They don't have a concept of time. You can try all those other things. But whatever the tool is for correction, that's what is being spoken of in verse 24. But if you spare that, if you avoid discipline, you're expressing hate, not love for your child. Verse 25 says, the righteous eateth to the satisfying of his soul, but the belly of the wicked shall want. Think about that. The righteous has enough to, see, that's a statement about contentment. The righteous has enough, ESV says, to satisfy his appetite. When you're not a slave to your appetite, you can actually experience satisfaction. I don't know if anybody in the history of modern music ever epitomized that better than skinny old Mick Jagger. What is hit? I can't get no. You guys know it. Satisfaction. Man, I try. And he tried. I can't get no. He couldn't. It was impossible. Because lust is never satisfied. But satisfaction is something that is attainable with contentment. Chapter 14. Let's go as far as we can go. Every wise woman buildeth her house, but the foolish plucketh it down with her hands, undermining the house. I mean, it's an amazing picture of a wise woman building a house. They built their houses in Israel, placing stone upon stone, fitting them together. And this is the picture of a woman pulling it apart. It takes foolishness to undermine that, to just tear it all down. Verse 2 says, he that walketh in his uprightness feareth the Lord, but he that is perverse in his way despiseth him. So it doesn't matter what we say, it's what we do. It's how the Lord Jesus said, if you love me, keep my commands. You're like, and why do you call me Lord? You don't do what I say. So saying Lord, saying I love you, didn't mean as much as what we do. So if you walk in uprightness, you're expressing fear of the Lord. But if you're perverse in your ways, you're despising. You're demonstrating contempt for God. Verse 3. In the mouth of the foolish is a rod of pride. But the lips of the wise shall preserve them. Let me give you that one from the English Standard Version. By the mouth of a fool comes a rod for his back. The fool, with his mouth, invites the beating. But the lips of the wise will preserve them. Oh, I love verse 4. Verse 4 is profound. Verse 4 is for so, it applies to so many things in life, but especially marriage. If you're married, hear verse 4. If you're single, hear verse 4. Where no oxen are, the crib is clean, but much increase is by the strength of the ox. You're like, what's that got to do with marriage? Come on. If you don't have an ox, you know what else you don't have to have? A shovel. But if you've got an ox, you got to do some maintenance. You got to shovel ox dung, and you got to shovel ox food. So it's a trade-off. You just determine, you know what, it's worth it. I got to have an ox. I can get more done. Get it? Oh, ladies, you want a husband, right? You want a husband, and you got to put up with other things. You got to have a shovel. You're going to have to put up with beard trimmings in the sink. Stuff. There's a human relationship whereby you're going to discover your own selfishness. There's nothing like marriage to help a person to realize, wow, I'm selfish. You discover that you got to die to yourself. It's a trade-off, right? It's like, all right, if you want to have a car, along with it comes car payments, cost, maintenance, insurance, right? But we decide it's worth it because it beats walking. We can go a long ways, short time. It's kind of nice. Don't you agree? So you can't complain. It's crazy to complain about it. Car, there's always something. Either I'm making payments or I'm buying parts. Well, that's the way it is. You can't complain about an ox. This ox is always making messes. Well, I've got this ox because it's really strong. So, I mean, there's stuff, ladies, there's things you got to put up with if you want a husband, but they're good to have around. They move heavy stuff. And they're, you know, if you can channel that strength, you can get things done. It's in the Bible. But it's the conjunction but. You guys all remember. Conjunction, junction, what's your function? You guys understand. It's connecting phrases and clauses, right? So it's where there's no ox, the crib is clean, but you can get a lot done with an ox. All right, it's the same for you men. You say you want a wife. Well, you better know. There's some maintenance involved, fellas. All right, verse 5, move along. The faithful witness will not lie, but a false witness will utter lies. Is that true or what? I mean, it's people that tell the truth don't lie. That's what that verse says. But liars lie. That's what they do. Actually, the ESV says that a false witness breathes out lies. They just breathe it out. They inhale, they exhale a lie. That's what they do. Verse 6, a scorner seeketh wisdom and findeth it not. A scorner can't find it. A scorner is like, I'm looking for wisdom. With the eyes buttoned shut. A scorner seeketh wisdom and findeth it not, but knowledge is easy unto him that hath understanding. All right, so everybody today is pursuing knowledge. Knowledge is like the thing. I just need education. What is that? Just need to be given knowledge. And the people will try to buy knowledge. They'll try to buy it by attending the classes and paying the professors in the institution. You can get knowledge. But what good is it if you don't have understanding? No. Knowledge is easy to him that hath understanding. It's easy for a man of understanding. Verse 7, go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceivest not in him the lips of knowledge. It is verse 7 in the ESV, leave the presence of a fool, for there you do not meet words of knowledge. So you understand that? You don't want to make them your companions. As soon as you realize, okay, that's a fool. Can leave. Just get away from them. Nothing to gain here. Could that be any plainer? Verse 8, the wisdom of the prudent is to understand his way, but the folly of fools is deceit. The wisdom of the prudent is to discern his way. Discern, right? But the folly of fools is deceiving. It is. No discerning, only deceiving. Verse 9 says, fools make a mock at sin, but among the righteous there is favor. Verse 10, the heart knoweth his own bitterness, and a stranger doth not intermeddle with his joy. How does that translate in the ESV? The heart knoweth his own bitterness, and no stranger shares its joy. Empathy is important. But it's also important when you're empathizing, be quick to say, oh, I know how you feel. That's what that verse is telling us. You may not. Only the heart knows its own. And only the heart can really know its own joy. There's only one that you can actually count on that actually knows our bitterness, our sorrow, and our joy. It's only one, and that's the Lord. Nothing's hidden to him. He's the only one that could say to us with authority, I know how you feel. And that's important, to be able to say, I understand. It's important to be able to empathize. Empathy's important. It's what the New Testament calls us to rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. It's what we're called to, but we shouldn't be quick to go, I know exactly how you feel. No, don't say that. Verse 11 says, the house of the wicked shall be overthrown, but the tabernacle of the upright shall flourish. So contrast house with tent. That even the house, what seems permanent of the wicked, will be overthrown, but even what looks temporary, a tent of the upright, it's going to flourish. Well, surely you've all heard this verse quoted by many a preacher, verse 12. There is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. Man, it seems right. It might even feel right. I don't know how many times that has been, that lame expression has been used in pop songs. That expression, that feels so right, it can't be wrong. That's a stupid thought. That's a profoundly untrue statement. It feels so right, it can't be wrong. That's the very last thing that every single rat thinks approaching the bait on the trap before the big bar comes down, slap, and breaks his spine, leaves him kicking to his death. His very last thought was, seems so right, this feels so right. This feels so right, it can't be wrong. There's all kinds of things that feel right that ain't right. So it's important to recognize there's a way that seemeth right unto a man. But the end thereof are the ways of death. It may feel right. It may seem right. Verse 13, even in laughter the heart is sorrowful, and the end of that mirth is heaviness. ESV on that modern translation, even in laughter the heart may ache. In the end of joy may be grief. It's possible to laugh a little while, find a little relief, but then come right back to your heartbreak, come right back to your ache. And it's true. May, it doesn't have to be, but it may, even the end of your partying may still return you right back to your grief. Verse 14, the backslider in heart shall be filled with his own ways, and a good man shall be satisfied from himself, or the fruit of his own ways. All right, so there's the term for you, in case you've ever thought, where's that term in the Bible, backslider? Well, there's one of the many places. Backsliding. Sliding back. Losing forward momentum. Morally speaking, going back, returning to things that you know you got to leave behind. It's the backslider in heart. Brings trouble upon himself. Verse 15, the simple believe every word, but the prudent man looketh well to his goings. He gives actual thorough thought to his steps, the prudent man. Surely you remember that season of life when you were a kid and you were simple, because that's part of being a kid, right? We believed everything. And sadly, there were adults lying to us in the name of fun about all kinds of things, from Santa Claus to what happens to our little teeth, how that quarter end up there, or whatever it is now. That should not be. It is never right for us to deceive our children, not even in the name of fun. But simple, because they simply believe every word. You can't believe every word or you're stupid. You're simple. The prudent man looketh well to his goings. The prudent man gives thought to his steps. He steps deliberately. Verse 16, a wise man feareth and departeth from evil, but the fool rageth and is confident. Is there ever a better example of that absurdity than when you're drunk? When a person is drunk, confidence is at a high, while actual performance and intelligence and agility is at an absolute low. I've mocked it many times before. Let me do it again now. People never think that they are a better dancer than when they're at their worst. People never think they're a better driver than when they're at their most impaired. And they think they're being really wise and philosophical, and they're just slaying their audience. They look like fools, and if anybody videotapes it, and they see it on social media the next day, they're horrified. The distance between reality and their perception is frightening. So the wise man fears and departs from evil, but the fool rageth and is confident. King James Version. ESV says reckless and careless. Verse 17, he that is soon angry dealeth foolishly. If you're quick to anger, it's going to cost you. And a man of wicked devices is hated. Pretty simple, isn't it? So what is that saying? We must be those who are not soon angry. We should be those who are, as James says, slow to anger. We should be slow to anger, because being quick to anger costs. Verse 18, the simple inherit folly, but the prudent are crowned with knowledge. Verse 19, the evil bow before the good, and the wicked at the gates of the righteous. That's one of those verses that you want to, what's implied there is a word that's not there, and that is eventually. Not immediately. But when it's all said and done, the meek shall inherit the earth, according to the Lord. The evil bow before the good, that day will come. This is how the story ends. Verse 20 says, the poor is hated, even of his own neighbor, but the rich hath many friends. It is a profoundly true observation. Verse 21, he that despiseth his neighbor sinneth, but he that hath mercy on the poor, happy is he. Why? Because it's going to come back to you. Do not they err, verse 22 says, do not they err that devise evil, but mercy and truth shall be to them that devise good. So it's a mistake to devise evil. It'll cost. But if you plot good, it'll pay off. Profoundly true, verse 23, in all labor there is profit, but the talk of the lips tendeth only to penury. King James Version. In all toil there is some profit. So you might say, this is not very productive. Well, at least you're getting some exercise, building some character. There's always some profit. Always. To actually doing something. But just mere talk, it only leads to poverty. Talk and talk. Talking doesn't make any money. Doesn't produce anything. Verse 24, the crown of the wise is their riches, but the foolishness of fools is folly, or more foolishness. Verse 25, a true witness delivers souls. That's what a true witness does, rescues. But a deceitful witness speaketh lies. Verse 26, in the fear of the Lord is strong confidence, and his children shall have a place of refuge. That's a good ESV on verse 26. In the fear of the Lord, one has strong confidence, and his children will have a refuge. His. The man or the woman that fears the Lord. Verse 27, the fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, to depart from the snares of death. Fear the Lord. Fountain of life, the fear of the Lord, reverence for God. Pays off. Verse 28, in the multitude of people is the king's honor. But in the want of people is the destruction of the prince. So, no wise king wants to shrink the population that he leads, that he reigns over. It is insane. A new, insane, modern thought of the billionaire elite that the world's population must be reduced. I could talk a lot about that, but I'm not going to move on. Verse 29 says, he that is slow to wrath is of great understanding, but he that is hasty of spirit exalteth folly. So again, we're encouraged to be slow to anger. The person that has a hasty temper only exalts his own foolishness. Verse 30, a sound heart is the life of the flesh, but envy is the rottenness of the bones. Envy is a terrible thing, and it'll hurt you physically. It'll take its toll on you physically, rottenness of bones. So contrast what the English Standard Version calls a tranquil heart. It gives life to the flesh. The state of our heart, the state of our mind, and our inner being will, in fact, affect our outer being. Verse 31, he that oppresseth the poor reproacheth his maker, but he that honoreth him hath mercy on the poor. So understanding that every single human being is made in the image of God, and if you reproach the poor because he's poor, and you forget that he's made in God's image, you're offending God. Verse 32, the wicked is driven away in his wickedness, but the righteous hath hope in his death. Even in his death. Verse 33, wisdom resteth in the heart of him that hath understanding. But that which is in the midst of fools is made known. They just continually broadcast it. Put it this way, English Standard Version, wisdom rests in the heart of a man of understanding. It rests there. It makes itself known even in the midst of fools. Verse 34, righteousness exalteth the nation, but sin is the reproach to any people. We are, as a nation, living proof of this. Righteousness exalts a nation. It'll bring us honor. Sin, it's a reproach. It's a disgrace to any people. And lastly, verse 35, while the band comes on up, the king's favor is toward a wise servant, but his wrath is against him that causeth shame. Or his wrath falls on one who acts shamefully. But a servant who deals wisely has even the king's favor. How much more is that true of the king of the universe? Well, there, Proverbs chapter 13 and 14. Let's all stand together. We'll go out of here singing. And I encourage everybody to just meditate on those verses that spoke to you.